Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is now time for our featured segment. As Jamaicans at home and Jamaicans around the world pauses today to mark 60 years of political independence. Ladies and gentlemen, 60 years later, we have a lot of unanswered questions. Earlier on, you must have heard the Prime Minister mention when the Duke visited Jamaica. He said Jamaica is moving on. The question is, moving on when, moving on how, and moving on to what? We have heard the cry for Jamaica to be a republic. But are we ready to be a republic? And what kind of republic would we be moving on to? Our special guest has arrived. Anthony Turner, please do the honors and introduce our guest.
Well, Rascal, our specialist on my take this morning is Professor Rosalie Hamilton, CEO of the Lasco Chin Foundation, and Professor Hamilton was Vice President at the University of Technology Jamaica from 2008 to 2018, and she was awarded a professorship in the Scotia Bank Chair in Entrepreneurship and Development. She established and led the MSME Alliance, a network of small business organizations, for 10 years. She also established the Institute of Law and Economics and worked as a consultant and public educator on trade, governance, gender, and other areas of economic and social development. As chair of the Caribbean Philanthropic Alliance, she helped to mitigate the impact of climate change and fostering sustainable development by leading a Caribbean tree planting project in 2022 in 22 Caribbean countries and territories. And during the period February 2020 to June 2021, more than 1.5 million trees were planted across the Caribbean. And in June 2021, she was invited to be a distinguished scholar in the P.J. Patterson Center for African Caribbean Advocacy. So we welcome Professor Hamilton to Grooving Radio this Saturday morning.
Good morning, Professor Hamilton. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Good morning to you and your listeners.
Thank you so much. How is Jamaica this morning, Professor?
Happy. We're all happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know that we're at 60 years of independence. Uh-huh. I mean, for some, perhaps too many.
Right.
We bring all of this joy into a space that is difficult at this time, given all that has happened with the COVID pandemic and just the realities of living. But I think many Jamaicans this morning wake up and we're certainly celebrating this milestone in our history.
157 years after the abolition of cattle slavery, the Prince of Wales arrived in Jamaica, I think it was earlier this year, and he made a bold statement. This was the statement he made. This was the statement.
I strongly agree with my father, the Prince of Wales, who said in Barbados last year that the appalling atrocity of slavery forever stains our history. I want to express my profound sorrow. Slavery was abhorrent, and it should never have happened.
And then our Prime Minister, the Honourable Andrew Holness, had this to say.
Jamaica is a very free and liberal country. But Jamaica is, as you would see, a country that is very proud of our history, very proud of what we have achieved. And we are moving on, and we intend to attain in short order our development goals and fulfill our true ambitions and destiny as an independent, developed, prosperous country.
Professor, I said Jamaica today is celebrating 60 years of political independence. For those who don't understand what that is, Professor, can you just briefly explain to them what our political independence mean? Huh?
Well, let's give a little context. And, you know, I like to think about where we are in independence in the context of our 520-year history mm-hmm. From the arrival of Columbus to today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an important lens because you get a sense of the struggle, the fight of a resilient people to address the broad range of social and economic conditions of life, of living, mm-hmm. in the face of oppression. Mm-hmm. And so the pursuit of freedom, self-determination, and humanity have been constant since then for over 500 years. Mm-hmm. That's a lens to see. So independence became one important juncture where we're trying to break free from chattel slavery. And the freedom was some basic things like being able to have your family and not have them stolen. Being able to, as Robin Killens talks about, looking someone in your eyes as an equal human being. You know, that sense of you do not belong to somebody. Somebody doesn't own you. You are a free person.
Mm.
But this disappointment in the post-emancipation era was real. You know, many couldn't leave the plantation and in fact had to pay rent in appalling living conditions just to be there if you weren't working on the plantation. So there was real serious disappointment, but the struggle continued. Mm-hmm. And of course we went through the Morant Rebellion and, mm-hmm. you know, all of the wars and so on, and the Baptist Wars and so on. And we fast-tracked to Jamaica, to independence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, independence, and let me say, prior to independence, we had the 1938 uprising,
mm-hmm.
of these social and economic conditions since emancipation that had not changed significantly.
Mm-hmm.
That's the context.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that led to the Moyer Commission, a report and investigations and so on, and some efforts to make improvements, but they simply were not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it led to this independence where the expectation from emancipation as mm-hmm. part of that 500-year journey was that finally we could end this arrangement, this old colonial arrangement that was oppressive,
mm-hmm.
and we could now be free.
Mm.
And so Rex Nettleford puts it this way, and he describes the independence promise in his book, Jamaican Independence. He said, the empowerment of the formerly colonized would finally get to this point where we could create a Jamaica in our own interest and be masters of our own destiny.
Mm.
And he saw it as a process of self-actualization and social transformation and the total transfer of power to the masses of the population, and he describes them as the people from below. So that was a promise, that was the expectation.
Mm.
And so it can't be seen as simply we move away from the British.
Mm.
It was much more than that.
Right.
It was the aspirations of a people on a more than 500-year journey. And, you know, we thought that finally we would get to what was described then as self-government.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about this self-determination and actualization of a people.
Mm. You know, I attended high school in the 70s in Jamaica. And every time independence rolled around, we would also hear about federation. And did we miss the beat? Did we miss the boat? Did we choose independence over federation? And when we talk about federation, if you look at the European Union today, what it is, Anthony, that's the kind of federation that Jamaica was talking about way back when. But they chose independence. And in August 1962, there were two cousins, Norman Washington Manley and Sir Alexander Bustamante. They struck a deal with Great Britain. And today, that deal marked 60 years. Now, when we hear the Prime Minister say, we're moving on, Professor. We're moving on. What are we moving on to? Are we ready to move on? Huh?
Well, you know, it's interesting, the question, are you ready? Because that was exactly the question in 1962.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
And there were many who said, if we were not, we should become, stay as part of the colonial arrangement. And today, in 2022, people have the view that in February of the last vestiges of colonial power, the Queen as head of state in Jamaica, any idea that we should move away from that is not good, and we should stay. That, though, some people still have that view in 2022. It's inconceivable in my mind, because you have a head of state and you heard the tape, I'm glad you played it, of her and the Queen's grandchild. And he said he was sorry. In a world where the debate of reparations is taking place and is in fact happening, the last move in that direction is what we saw the Pope did in Canada. This is a real discussion. Mm-hmm. It's not a theoretical one.
Mm-hmm.
And the Queen's grandson, this is our head of state grandson, says, carries this message. But our head of state has not apologized, has not taken responsibility. That's what it means. Mm-hmm. Statements of sorrow doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can say you're sorry.
Yeah.
What matters and what is meaningful is when you take responsibility,
yes,
you promise never to do anything like this again, and you begin a process of reparatory justice.
Mm-hmm.
That is what is required. Right. You cannot be sorry, seriously, for the atrocities when you perpetuate to the official governmental arrangement in England, racism, and the accusations even in your own family.
Mm.
That's not meaningful.
Mm.
And therefore, it is important to recognize that these words are simply words of regret that don't translate to much.
Mm.
We need to get to a point where the recognition of the perpetuation of these institutions still live with us, and they are real.
Mm.
And they permeate our education system.
Yeah.
To today, students in our schools are prohibited of wearing their hair in natural ways.
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
You can't wear a big afro in Jamaican schools. You can't, some schools, I should say.
Yeah.
And so on. You're prohibited of being yourself.
Mm.
Because you can't wear your hair in a certain way.
Mm.
White kids can wear their hair long, but our hair that goes long goes out, and it is prohibited.
Mm.
Those are the realities today. Where did they come from?
Wow. Wow.
So it's very important,
yeah,
that we know that we have a head of state who is not prepared to apologize,
mm-hmm,
and who, by the way, is part of a system that keeps our relics of the past,
mm-hmm,
our indigenous people.
Mm-hmm.
They are right there in the British Museum,
yeah,
and we cannot get access to them.
You know, Professor and Anthony, I don't know if what the professor said just now, if it slipped you when she said about the Pope in Canada. And to the listeners, to understand this, when William arrived in Jamaica, he said he carried the message that his father had taken to Barbados the year before. And he said slavery should not have happened. But last week, he didn't apologize. But last week, the Pope went to Canada and apologized to indigenous people for what the Catholic system had done to them. That's what we're looking for from our head of state. We're looking for them to apologize to us, Anthony Turner. And we haven't gotten that yet. 60 years of political independence. 157 years after the abolition of cattle slavery. And we haven't gotten that apology. Anthony Turner, you have a question?
Yeah, good morning, Professor. As we celebrate independence, I have to think back, because I'm just returning from Jamaica, and I know we struggled to find 10 songs. 60 years after independence, we could not find 10 songs for our festival song competition. I attended Reggae Songfest, and some of the lyrics I heard, I was appalled The question is, have we lost our way culturally 60 years later? Because there's so much legacy that we have to build on, but it seems we have not done and really equipped ourselves to move forward.
You know, I would not say that we've lost our way, because our culture is so rich and diverse. I would say that we've not done enough to truly exploit in a positive way the full potential of our cultural assets. I would express it that way. There's so much more that we could do. And I think in the absence of the kind of nurturing and encouragement and promoting and stimulating and enhancing of that culture, we have had the unfortunate experience where we get to our 6 years and we can't sign a song according to the official and the persons involved in making the judgment that they're not good enough. And I think the assessment really is, over the years, the kind of support that was required and could have been provided was not provided, and so today we find some deficiencies. But I would say that it's a quick fix. It's not something that can that is infinitely damaged. As I said, I think the richness of our culture and our cultural experience can be remedied with some serious strategic investment in ways and in a manner that can really, we can really come again.
You know, Professor Rosalie Hamilton, after we witnessed the CARICOM, the Commonwealth conundrum, and we witnessed Prince William's expressing profound sorrows, as he put it, the question now, republicanism in Jamaica, and that is the talk this morning about Jamaica wanting to go republic. Former Attorney General Marlene Malahu Ford was given a new ministry, the Ministry of Legal and Constitutional Affairs, and she would have handled, she was responsible for handling Jamaica going republic. Are we just simply talking now, or are we just kicking the can down the road here? When we come up with a new ministry, because we know the constitution that we currently have was handed down from Buckingham Palace. Yes, a little bit of amendment has been done to it, but we have never written our own constitution. This new ministry, handled by Minister Marlene Malahu Ford, are we just kicking the can down the road here today? Huh?
Well, we hope not. We have to take our government by their word, and they will prove over time if they're serious. The announcement was made. The intent was very clear. In fact, we were very pleased to hear that comprehensive constitutional reforms would take place. And I think that's a positive message, that we're going to look seriously at a constitution that didn't change significantly as independent, and that truly is lacking with respect to the kinds of change that we absolutely need. So we're pleased to hear that. And of course, we anxiously await our government's statement about what that actually means. We are concerned, of course, of the length of time that has taken. These announcements have been made. In fact, the We Are Moving On statement was made in March of this year. And we think it's time. It's absolutely time that we hear more details, and we're very clear what that actually means. Because we're talking about, on the one hand, the establishment of a republic, which would include the removal of the Dean of Head of State as part of the process, as far as we're concerned. Because we see that the move of the Queen, the move away from the Queen of Head of State, is not enough in and of itself. This unfinished business along this 500-year journey is important. We can't ignore it. And so the kinds of comprehensive constitutional changes that are required to address the the sovereignty of our people, to really ensure that in our constitution it is clear that the power of is in the hands of Jamaica. The power of the people reigns supreme. And that is the kinds of changes we're looking for. We're talking about people's sovereignty, and we want to make real the promise of independence as expressed by Rex Nettleford and others.
Mm. Ladies and gentlemen, our very special guest this morning is the former Vice President of the University of Technology, Professor Rosalie Hamilton. Our conversation this morning, Jamaica wants to move on, but move on to what? We're talking republicanism in Jamaica on this day, 60 years to the date. 60 years to the date of political independence in Jamaica. The Advocate Network in Jamaica is asked, they have many questions. We here in the diaspora, we have many questions, Professor Hamilton, as we witness flag-raising ceremony happening all over the world today to mark the 60th year of independence. Some would say that the education standard in Jamaica on August 6, 1962, many Jamaicans weren't smart enough or bright enough to understand what independence was at that time. We don't want to fall in the same trap again, huh, Professor, when we talk about going to a republic, huh?
Absolutely. Other republics that have simply removed the Queen of Head of State, they put a local as their president, a ceremonial president, and not much changes.
Mm-hmm.
And so the social and economic conditions of life pretty much remain the same.
Mm-hmm.
The political governance arrangement pretty much remains the same.
Mm-hmm.
And so it begs the question, why even make the change?
Mm.
And so it's important to end this colonial arrangement, I think, for our own psyche as a people, and for all the reasons we need to sever this relationship and redesign it, I would say, very importantly, in terms of a reparatory process in which we continue to dialogue and have a relationship with the British, but on different terms,
mm-hmm.
on self-respecting terms. And I think that's only one part. But the fundamental issue that affects the lives of every Jamaican is the set of arrangements that can ultimately improve the standard of living. And it's something that I've written about and talked about, because we saw only this year our Minister of Finance with an amazing graphic that he inserted in his speech that tracked our living standards, our GDP per capita, from 1962 to 2020. Mm-hmm. And we had a nice graph, right? And that this, what we saw was this fluctuating graph. And the minister's statement was, Jamaica's average income today is lower in real terms than it was 50 years ago.
Whoa.
So whoa. Our living standard is such that we are not better off than we were 50 years ago.
Mm.
That's the reality.
Mm.
And so we have to ask ourselves, and let me put that in global context, please. Because if we look at the top, the three countries in the world with the highest GDP per capita, you're talking about over $150,000 on average a year.
Mm.
And if you look at the countries at the bottom, you find that there are countries, mainly in Africa, with less than $1,000 a year.
Professor, hold that thought.
And Jamaica is about $5,000.
Wow. Hold that thought, Professor. The computers are going to take over, because I was just about to say it seems as if all signs are pointing in the wrong direction, including the economic of the country, education, healthcare, and crime, and you just went there. We will be back in 3 minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Groovin' Radio. Stay where you are. And thank you so much, Chronix. And that is how I welcome you back, ladies and gentlemen, to the final 26 minutes of our Grooving Radio's presentation this Saturday morning on the 60th anniversary of Jamaica's political independence. We are in our featured segment. It is called Mic Check. Our very special guest this Saturday morning is Professor Rosalie Hamilton, the former Vice President of the University of Technology. Anthony Turner is also a part of the conversation. Welcome back, Professor.
Thank you.
Welcome back, Anthony.
Yes.
Professor, as I welcome you back, before we took the break, it's funny how you mention the GDP and you mention where Jamaica is financially today. Now, then and now, and this is where I want to start, because I said, I had this written down, where I said, somebody has a radio horn in the background here. I said this, I have this written down, Professor. All fingers are pointing in, all signs are pointing now in some areas in the wrong direction. When it comes to crime and violence, when it comes to our education, the economic of the country, healthcare. There's a time in Jamaica where every parish had an hospital. But 60 years after independence, Professor, are we better off today than we were then?
Well, you know, as I said, you know, if you think about a 60-year journey and an assessment of our living standard 60 years later, suggesting that, you know, we are worse off. That's a very, very, very telling statement.
Mm-hmm.
And while the GDP per capita is not a perfect measure, it speaks to the fact that many Jamaicans are very badly off. And it doesn't capture the income inequality. It just gives us an average. But of course, the lower the number, the bigger the people at the bottom of the society.
Mm.
And we know that we have a small number of individuals at the top of the society who are doing very well. We have to continue to do very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so it speaks volumes,
yeah,
about where we are. You know, when you reflect over the 60 years, over the words, and you reflect on the words of both administrations, you repeatedly hear the terms, oh, we've gotten the economic fundamentals right.
Mm.
And you hear these economic indicators moving in the right direction. Right meaning what? If our economic growth and activities do not lead fundamentally to improving the lives of our people, then they're just words. That's ultimately where you want to go.
Mm.
And so these economic indicators ought to be indicators that give us a good clue as to the well-being of our people. And so when you, and depending on the analysis, we could break down and we can look at, for example, squatting in Jamaica. More than 20% of our population is living in squatting communities. UN Habitat did some analysis of the urban population living in slums. 60% of our urban population living in slums. They look at our education. There was this amazing comprehensive report done by Orlando Patterson and his team. Just last year, into this year, it was launched. It's telling us that our kids, you know, more than 70% of our kids are either not taking exams, or when they do take exams, many of them fail, but they don't achieve the minimum requirements to go into the world of work. All of these are indicators that suggest that we could do much better.
Mm. Mm. Anthony. Anthony,
yes,
hold on, Anthony. I'm not sure if you heard what the professor said about squatters in Jamaica. The percentage of our people that are living in squatters condition in Jamaica. That is a call for concern, Professor. 60 years after independence, and we're talking about this kind of squatting situation in Jamaica, and at the same time, you're saying that they're saying, or the government is saying, that they got the numbers right in terms of economics. That is a very serious thing, you know, Professor Hamilton.
Well, again, I mean, we could spend a whole day just reeling out data in terms of the condition of people, our healthcare. We know the problem; it has been ravaged with the COVID pandemic. We heard all the stories. Mm. You know, there's a lot of data that exists. We just have to look. It's sum total, however. And that is why the living conditions is a good kind of measure, because it tries to sum up everything in terms of, you know, the social and economic living standard mm-hmm. of all people. Mm. And it's there. And quite frankly, Jamaicans who are listening, Jamaicans in the diaspora, know when we come home, you can feel. Mm. Obviously, if you are connected to the 1% in our society, then you don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're blinkered, you really won't see it.
Mm.
Because you can live in a clustered environment in which, you know, your reality is your reality.
Wow.
But for most Jamaicans
wow.
who interact with people in the rural communities,
mm-hmm.
who interact with people in some of these inner city communities, I have a friend who is from the diaspora, and she's right now with one of living with her mom in one of these inner city communities. Everybody asks, you're not afraid.
Mm.
I said, no, this is where I was born. This is where my mom lives.
Mm.
And so you have these connections, and you see and you understand that we are not where we ought to be.
Professor.
You know, let me say this. For me, my standards are very high, because I believe, and you can call the bias if you like. I don't have a problem. I believe Jamaicans are the greatest people in the world.
Mm.
That's just my belief,
mm-hmm.
and it's not a wishful thinking. It's because we have come out of a 500-year journey, and I know that what we can do in a lifetime. Mm. I'm a product of it. I've seen what my father did.
Mm-hmm.
He started life with 6 shillings and a hammer, and in one lifestyle, in one life, he was able to, you know, to educate his kids and lift the standard of living in one lifetime.
Right.
And I'm saying, Jamaicans can do it. That's what we have people like young Shelly Ann Fraser in a lifetime, and she don't finish half, in half a lifetime, right? She's come out of those slums, right? And she's become the best, the fastest woman in the world, right? You look at Usain Bolt, come out of rural Jamaica. The fastest man in the world. Come on. These are living testimonies of the potential of the Jamaicans. They are the greatest.
Indeed. Indeed.
Marcus Garvey told us that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in conditions that didn't exist today, there was no internet.
Mm-hmm.
He was influencing the majority of Africans across the world.
Mm-hmm.
Along this continent.
Mm-hmm.
He carried a message of hope, of greatness of a people.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's who we are. And therefore, for me, when I see this data that tells us and tell all of us, if we're looking careful, we are underperforming.
Yeah.
We are punching below our weight in the international arena.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm frustrated, and that's why I do what I do to say to Jamaicans, we can do more.
And that is why we do these kind of thought-provoking programs, Professor Hamilton, because many of us are just sitting around as if it's A-OK. And it's not A-OK, because if you look at where we're coming from to where we are now, we're quick to talk about the 2% here in America, you know? But we don't want to talk about the 1% in Jamaica, as if we are scared. But we shouldn't be afraid, ladies and gentlemen, because in some aspects, in a lot of aspects, we're way behind the eight ball. Did you hear me clearly when I said there was a time in Jamaica when every parish had an hospital in Jamaica? But I don't know who is a smart mind and who were the group of people who were the smart minds that decided that, no, we don't need all these hospitals. And then we saw the end result here in the COVID-19 pandemic. Anthony, the floor is yours.
Yeah, Professor, you talk about some of the achievements of Jamaica. And I know as part of the year-long celebration, it's being observed under the theme, Reigniting a Nation for Greatness. Can you just talk about some of the positive things outside of sports that we've accomplished that we should be proud of?
Repeat that question. I didn't quite hear it.
No, I'm just saying we're the theme for this year's celebration is reigniting a nation for greatness. And you spoke about you saying, you spoke about Shelley, and I'm just asking to reiterate some of the positive things that we've achieved in 6 years that we should be proud of.
Well, you know, let me say that I see a lot of the, I'm going to come back to the individual achievements, but some institutional ones that come to mind is, for example, the transformation that we've made in our electoral process. Jamaicans may remember the days when more than 100% of people in a constituency voted. You know, we had some voter results, 160% vote in one direction. So there's a lot of padding of the election results and, of course, and we've cleaned that up somewhat. Obviously, today we're still concerned at the fact that we have buying votes. There seems to be evidence in that direction. But the violence that was associated with the political elections, mm-hmm. you know, we all were afraid. People used to sleep under them bed and all of that. Much of that has changed. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we have this peaceful transfer of power, mm-hmm. by, you know, having cleaned up the violence during the election period. And again, we still have it. It's not perfect. Mm-hmm. We still have it here and there, but certainly not as bad as it was in the 70s. Mm-hmm. You have a peaceful transfer of power, and your audience could reflect on the significance of that, mm-hmm. because America right now is in the throes of a debate about how they could have lost that. Mm-hmm. Right? So the fact that we've never had anything quite like what mm-hmm. America just recently experienced in terms of a transfer of power is significant. Mm-hmm. Jamaica's freedom of the press, very, very impressive. I'm speaking to you freely, mm-hmm. Without any fear that I'll be arrested and imprisoned and even killed mm-hmm. for what I am saying. It's real. I think about other countries in the world mm-hmm. in which this kind of freedom doesn't exist.
Right.
So we have a few things that we can be proud of, and we should always be mindful of them.
Right.
And I think we should also remember the achievements of individuals.
Right.
Especially those in the diaspora. And I want to talk about people like Grace Jones,
right.
and Monty Alexander in the entertainment sphere,
mm-hmm.
have done very well. Basil Watson, mm-hmm. you know, has putting up all these statues and so on. We're very proud of people like that. Claude McKay, right? You had broadcasters in England back in the day, Una Martin.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know of sports persons like Patrick Ewing,
mm-hmm.
right? And, mm-hmm. and you know, John Barnes from England, the footballer.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, these are individuals that make us proud. And these names are significant because in their lifetime,
right.
they've left Jamaica and have done well.
Except,
I mean, we know the second generation have done well,
mm-hmm.
but they, you know, they had a longer formation. But we talk about individuals born in their Jamaica,
mm-hmm.
changed their society.
Right.
And their citizenship,
mm-hmm.
and have done well,
mm-hmm.
we must be proud.
You know, Professor, and oftentimes we talk, the names of sports legends come up in our conversation, but when we talk about Jamaicans and their offsprings, and let's use, for instance, Kamala Harris, the vice president. Her father is a professor, Professor Harris, at one of the best universities not only in America, but probably in the world. When we talk about, we have Jamaicans who are mayors in this country. When we talk about, we have Jamaicans who have gone to Congress in this country. When we talk about Jamaicans, like Anthony, we interviewed a Jamaican lady, young lady here, who's responsible, her sole responsibility right now, and I won't mention her name, but her sole responsibility right now is the production of the fighter jet from F-90, from F-16 to F-19 to F-24. That is her responsibility. She is a top-notch engineer. We have professors at all levels here in the university system. Our teachers are well sought after. There's a report coming out of Jamaica this morning that over 400 teachers have left the school system in Jamaica for better paying jobs abroad. So we have produced some very good people on all levels. Yeah? So we're very proud people. We're great people. But Professor, too many of our brothers and sisters are living in poverty, are living in squatters situation. Crime and violence has taken a turn since independence. Over 40,000 people have been killed in Jamaica since August 6, 1962. More than what the National Stadium can hold. Our healthcare system is not doing well. Emancipated, independent, but we still have a colonial education system. And economic-wise, as I spoke about earlier, it is not doing well. So when we talk about moving on in Jamaica to become a republic, we have to be mindful. And one of the things that we will do here, Professor, is try and educate the people on how we should move forward. Your closing remarks, Professor.
You know, I want to encourage Jamaicans in the diaspora to pay close attention to the developments and support the initiatives. There are many of us here, many Jamaicans who are trying in different ways, whether through developing their own business, whether through schooling initiatives. And I want to just encourage Jamaicans in the diaspora to continue to support in the very direct ways that you have done and you continue to do. It is imperative. It's a lifeline for some. And importantly, it builds the kinds of institutions and initiatives and actions that can, in fact, transform Jamaica. And so I would want to say that continue to provide the support, mm-hmm. continue to partner with many of us in organizations, individuals who are doing good for Jamaica. And let's together work on important collaborative initiatives that can transform our country. Mm.
Professor Rosalie Hamilton, I thank you so much for joining us. And as I told you a few weeks ago, we're going to be having a series of these conversations. And I want the Advocate Network in Jamaica to keep the pressure on the government, because we were given a timeline. And you must remember that when the big talk about moving on came up, we heard that we would have moved on before Jamaica celebrated 60. Huh? And when the new ministry was constructed, we were told again that we were going to be moving on before today's date. Well, so far, we haven't heard much. And we want our citizens to understand that we're not going down the same path that we took when we signed that agreement on August 6, 1962. Thank you so much, Professor Hamilton.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll talk again real soon. Take care. One love. Anthony? Let me see if Anthony's here. Anthony? No, I've lost Anthony Turner there. Anthony? You're not there. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're almost at the end of our presentation, this Saturday morning. Our very special guest was Professor Rosalie Hamilton, former vice president at the University of Technology there in Jamaica. She's now over at the Chin Lasker Group as their CEO, ladies and gentlemen. Anthony Turner was also a part of that conversation. Before we go this morning, ladies and gentlemen, I want to send some birthday greetings. Birthday greetings going out to Jair, belated birthday greetings going out to Jair, who celebrated on August 1st. Legendary, beloved, and respected musician, singer, producer, songwriter, Mr. Dean Fraser. He was born on the 4th. He turned 65 this past week. Legendary businessman, Mr. Vincent Osang, is celebrating a birthday this weekend. Legendary Dennis Al Capone is also celebrating a birthday today. Also is Dr. Millicent Comrie. If you're celebrating a birthday today, I say happy birthday. And for all who celebrate in the month of August, we say happy birthday. Grooving Radio was executively produced by Clement Hume. and Christopher Roberts. Groovin' Radio was hosted by Rasklim. Contributing to our presentation this Saturday morning, we kicked the morning off with our musical presentation. And yes, it was the music of Beresford Hammond. Next weekend, spend the entire weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Beres Hammond will be in Connecticut on Friday. On Saturday, he will be at the NJ Pack in New Jersey. And come next week, Sunday, on the 14th, it's going to be the Coney Island Amphitheater. Our musical presentation this Saturday morning. In our community engagement segment, yes, celebrating 60 years with Jamaica, this morning we had the privilege of interviewing Sandra Lindsay, PhD. She was awarded the Medal of Honor by President Joe Biden, and she broke the news this morning that Jamaica will give her the Order of Distinction on the commander level. Well, on the 20th, she will be honored by the Jamaica Independent Gala, the official gala at the Marriott Marquis. She will be one of the honorees there, ladies and gentlemen. We got news courtesy of the Jamaica Gleaner, Jamaica Now, with Mr. Javon Johnson. Anthony Turner provided entertainment report, and then he provided the bio for our very special mic check guest. Tomorrow evening, Chef Garfield and DJ Roy will be sailing around Manhattan, celebrating Jamaica's 60th and Genesis 1 anniversary, ladies and gentlemen. And I was told that the boat is a total sell-off. I have one more ticket I can give away. Roy called me this week and give me one more ticket for giveaway. But guess what, ladies and gentlemen? I am not going to give that ticket away so easily. And I'm going to give it to charity. The big boat ride sell-off. Up next is going to be the Wake Up Radio team. The Jam follows at 1. Link Up at 6. Soundchat Radio at 8 p.m. Groovin' Radio might be making the move. Groovin' Radio might be bridging the move. Did I say bridge? Huh? Did I say bridge, ladies and gentlemen? You just never know. Stay tuned for the Wake Up Radio team. And waiting on the other side of the 11:30 hour, it is going to be Wake Up Radio with Carl B and Sister Debo. I will see you tomorrow evening at 6 p.m.